calculate exactly how much your fashion preferences are worth to you and act accordingly. What was the thing on Facebook a while back? I was told to dress for the job you want rather than the job you're interviewing for. So here I am in front of a pulpit committee dressed as Batman.
You'll want to be sure to catch the rest of Pastor Terry's message in just a moment. But first, we want to thank you for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast with pastor and author Terry Bailey. This broadcast is also produced as a free podcast, which you can find on iTunes or become a subscriber through our website. We'll have more information at the end of the broadcast, but for right now, let's join Pastor Terry as he preaches this insightful message.
How many of you have ever said or done something and you knew fully with 100% conviction the moment you said or did it, I'm going to pay for that? Yeah, it's part of the human condition. Choices come with prices. It's true in everything. When you're considering a career as a young person, know that career choices come with expenses and risks, as well as rewards and benefits. And you need to be aware of both if you're going to make an informed decision. As a spate of televised commercials reminds us these days, the choice to smoke tobacco comes with consequences. All lifestyle choices have consequences. Back when my kids were teenagers, and Caleb is not here, but he will remember this if you ask him, because it was his friends more than the others, but it was the others too, just mostly Caleb's friends. Some of my kids' friends did the goth thing, you know, where they dressed all in black and they had the facial piercings and the body piercings, and they had either stringy hair like that. A few of them did kind of the strange mohawk things, and there were safety pins and barbed wire and all this stuff. I accepted those young people without much judgment, while continually stressing to my own children, you will not do the goth thing. I accepted these other young people with a minimal amount of judgment, thinking this too will pass. And it mostly did. You see a couple of middle-aged goths running around now and then, but not too many. Most of them gave it up. I will tell you this, it doesn't look as good on middle-aged people. It didn't look real good on young people, but it looks worse on middle-aged people. Once your skin starts to sag and you got 5 pounds of wire pulling it down under your arm and all that. Mostly, it passed away. But because I accepted those young people with a minimum of judgment, a couple of them came to me at times and confided in me that they wished that everybody was a little bit more like me in their lack of judgmentalism, because they had begun to discover particularly that employment opportunities were limited for goths. Imagine that. The dentist did not want a goth receptionist. Even Walmart had trouble picturing goth cashiers, and door-to-door sales was not a natural winner for young goths. So they came to me and they expressed their concerns about this, and I tried to give them as honest an answer as I could. I told them, you're asking potential employers to look past the perception you create with your fashion statement, and really you're asking them to hope that who you really are is not the same as the person you look like you are on the outside, and you're asking them to ask their customers to overlook the same things, and it's a lot of overlooking. And as long as there are other young people whose fashion statements do not create these perception problems, you are at a disadvantage. So what you need to do is calculate exactly how much your fashion preferences are worth to you and act accordingly. What was the thing on Facebook a while back? I was told to dress for the job you want rather than the job you're interviewing for. So here I am in front of a pulpit committee dressed as Batman. Only in America, and only recently, has it been taught that freedom means being able to make whatever choices you want without consequences. That is a lie. All choices have consequences. Outside the realms of fashion and employment and social responsibility, the choices and prices thing still holds true. One choice, I believe, the most important choice that anyone can ever make, it is particularly true of. We continue in the book of Acts today, having worked our way up to chapter 9. A few chapters back, when the persecution of the church was still in its infancy, there was a teacher named Gamaliel who advised the Pharisees and the Sadducees to take a wait-and-see kind of approach. You never know. He could be the Christ. Maybe this teaching is of God, and if so, resisting it would put you in the unfortunate position of fighting against God, which would have consequences. To the extent, and it was limited, that the Pharisees and Sadducees took Gamaliel's advice, they didn't take it for very long. They chose against Jesus Christ, and they proceeded accordingly, which in turn led to the situation of the early Christians having to decide exactly how much their faith was worth to them, because now there were serious consequences to siding with Jesus Christ. As we saw in the last chapter, one of the men making the choice against Christ was named Saul. Saul approved the stoning of Stephen. He approved it so much that he went and got legal papers drawn up, naming him as a certified agent of the civic Jewish authority to track down and punish people who had chosen to side with the gospel of Jesus Christ. And Saul made a job of it, became a terror to the church. As we read last week, he wrought havoc, it said, on those early Christians. And when Saul saw, as we saw last week, that the persecution caused some of those Christians who had hunkered down in the Jerusalem commune to decide to go home, then Saul thought they should be tracked down to wherever they have gone. We can't let them get away. We need to go everywhere they have gone and haul them back in chains to be punished here in Jerusalem for their presumption in siding with Jesus Christ. And so under Saul's administration, the persecution left Jerusalem. And he went out into the wider world to seek and destroy Christianity wherever it might have fled. Saul decided 100% against Jesus Christ, and Jesus took it just that way. In the part of the ninth chapter we did not read, Saul sets out for Damascus. You see there on the map, it's about 150 miles from Jerusalem in a straight line. It's actually outside the borders of the country of Israel into the country of Syria, just to show how earnest and dedicated Saul was about this whole persecution thing. And on the way to Damascus, he encounters Christ. And it was kind of a traumatic experience with sound and noise and possibly an earthquake. And Saul fell to the ground, and Jesus said to him, "Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me?" "Well, who are you?" Saul asks. And the answer comes, "I'm Jesus. Jesus whom you are persecuting." There's something to learn here. We like that part of the 25th chapter of the Gospel according to Matthew where we are told, "If you feed the hungry, clothe the naked, tend the sick, and visit the prisoners. Jesus takes it this way. He says, as much as you have done this to the least of these, my brethren, you've done it to me directly. Do it for them. I take it as doing it for me. We like that part. We are a little iffier about what follows, where we are told, if we neglect the hungry, the naked, the sick, and the prisoner, Jesus says, inasmuch as you did not do it for the least of these, my brethren, I take it as you having neglected me when I was in need. We don't like that as well. But let me tell you that that is not the end of it. Act of kindness and passive neglect are not the whole continuum. When Saul was actively arresting, jailing, beating, and murdering Christians, Jesus' first question for Saul was, why are you picking on me? On me, personally. When we are cruel to the least of these, Jesus' brethren, he takes it just as personally as if we were kind to them or neglected them. And this is especially true in the church. Excuse me. Saul will later write that the church is the body of Christ. Peter will use different words, but he will say effectively the same thing. Persecute the church. Persecute the Lord. Talk about poking the bear. Persecuting God has got to be the worst idea in a long history of bad ideas. Saul meets Christ whom he persecutes and he falls to the ground in terror. There is more of this to come. Ultimately, those who choose against Jesus Christ will encounter him one day, and the Bible tells us that they will pray that the hills may fall on them and cover them if that would keep them from facing the wrath of Jesus, against whom they have sided. Saul got just a little foretaste of that. And then Jesus says to him, get up and go on into Damascus, and there it will be told you what you must do. Must do. You see, there are consequences. Before you get to that calling for the hills to fall on you thing, there are consequences, things Saul must do. I'll give you a little spoiler alert. These things will not always be easy or pleasant. Saul is blinded from his encounter with Jesus, and so he is led blind into Damascus, and there he waits. And while he waits, God speaks to a Christian named Ananias, one of those for whom Saul came, intending to drag him back in chains to Jerusalem for punishment. And word of Saul's mission has already reached the ears of the people in Damascus. Ananias has heard of him, and God says to Ananias, go see Saul. And Ananias says to God, go see Saul? Saul? I've heard all about Saul, how he harmed the Christians in Jerusalem. Now he came here to do the very same thing. Choosing for Jesus Christ has consequences. Not every mission that God will assign us is all ice cream and lollipops. Go see Saul. And for Saul too, the consequences continue. Saul was about to make a choice for Jesus Christ. That choice will be as sincere as the one he made against Jesus Christ. Once Saul has chosen Jesus Christ, he will be more dedicated to Jesus than almost anyone. And yet, his newly fellow Christians have trouble and are going to continue having trouble trusting him. I mean, you know, you throw a few people in jail, burn their homes, and throw rocks at someone until they're dead, and you get a reputation. Hardly seems fair, right? But that clings to you. This price Paul will continue to pay, and there will be others. God says to Ananias, Saul is a chosen instrument of mine to bear my name before the Gentiles and kings and the sons of Israel, and I will show him how much he must suffer for my name's sake. I do not believe in the Eastern religious doctrine of karma as it has been developed. But I do believe the Bible when it says, as you have sown, so shall you reap. Perhaps in the economy of God, there are many reasons for which Paul must suffer, but he must suffer. His own back will know the sting of the lash and the rod to which he subjected so many others. His own limbs will know the ache and confinement of the stocks to which he subjected so many others. His own eye will become accustomed to the dimness of the prison cells in which he confined so many others. Paul approved the stoning of Stephen at the hands of the Jews of the cities of Lystra and Derbe. He will find out exactly what it feels like to be stoned. Pain, distrust, humiliation, injustice, imprisonment, deprivation, and ultimately the martyr's death, Saul must bear it all in the name of Jesus Christ, for whose name's sake he subjected so many to the same sufferings. Maybe it is the seed truth on which the Eastern doctrine of karma is built. Maybe it's simply important that Saul, in making this choice to believe in Jesus Christ, has to know the full price involved, has to be able to calculate what this move is worth to him. Maybe it's all for the future record and the inspiration of generations of Christians yet to come who, when they do come, will face persecutions of their own. And perhaps that's the thing to remember. The world is fallen and given over to spiritual evil. We forget this at our own peril. The world is fallen and given over to spiritual evil. To choose Christ in the midst of such a world has consequences. It was not for nothing that Christ included in those teachings which have become known as the Beatitudes these words: blessed are those who have been persecuted for the sake of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you and persecute you and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward in heaven is great. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. When we apply these words to ourselves, certainly I would think, Saul must be counted among the prophets who were before us. And so it has been around the whole world for most of the history of the church. And so it is today in many places, perhaps most places. You and I had the good fortune of growing up and living in the time of a great exception, which I believe to be quickly ending. Barna Group Research has tracked a change in American thought between the years 2012 to 2015. This is popular thought. Make of it what you will. It's just what everybody thinks. But there is a surprising amount of agreement. The trend concerns our feelings about religious freedom and the restrictions placed on it and the actual persecutions levied against it. And it seems that all of us agree in America, religious freedom is waning and restrictions and persecutions are increasing. Even among non-religious Americans, in 2012, only 3% of non-religious Americans felt that religious freedom was on the decline. In 2015, that number had grown to 10%. And among Christians of all stripes, whatever kind of Christian you might care to name, the 2012 number was 32%. The 2015 number, oops, I said that wrong. 2012, 19%. 2015, 32%. I'm going to get this right sooner or later. Among religious Americans of non-Christian faith, there. Now I got it said, among religious Americans of non-Christian faith, 19% in 2012, 32%. 2015. All practicing Christians, whatever kind of Christianity you may wish to cite, 44% in 2012 felt persecuted or restricted, 52% in 2015. For evangelicals, and we use that word kind of loosely, and maybe you hear the word evangelicals and they're not sure exactly what it means, it refers to a range of Christian denominations or church movements that have significant enough differences in doctrine to be separate, but who believe and agree about a core gospel or evangel, because that's the same word, that's important enough that we can at least worship and exist together. Usually evangelicals refers to Christians who are not Catholics or Episcopalians, mostly not Lutherans. And on the other end of the scale, who are not universalist Unitarians and mostly not part of the United Church of Christ. Evangelicals would usually include Methodists, Presbyterians, Baptists, the Churches of God of Anderson, Indiana, and Cleveland, Tennessee, some of the more Pentecostal movements, a lot of Wesleyans, and a lot of people say that it includes we and the Christian churches, Churches of Christ. There is no official list of accepted evangelical bodies. But in whatever way the Barna Group has decided that people fall under that heading, among evangelicals, the 2012 number, 60% saw religious freedom on the decline, persecution on the increase, 77% by 2015. So overall, all Americans of whatever religious or non-religious stripe, 33% in 2012, 41% in 2015. You can look it up and read more details. The article is Concerns Over Religious Freedom at Barna.org. If you can't remember that, you can see me later and we can write it down. The point is, everyone sees it happening. There are consequences to choosing Christ in a fallen world. Prices to be paid. What I'd like to tell you is that that negative price, however high it goes, is temporal. The negative consequences of choosing against Christ are eternal. The same Saul, whom God insisted must pay such a heavy price and who did pay it in full, would later, when he became known as Paul, write these words: "For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that is to be revealed in us." Romans 8:18. Prices, consequences, risks, rewards. There may even be short-term benefits to choosing against Christ, as Moses had it, the pleasures of sin for a season. But even if those pleasures lasted, which they do not, they would not justify the horrible eternal price to be paid for rejecting the grace of God in Jesus Christ. Nor would they compare to the present joy of knowing Him, much less the joy of the world to come. And even if there are short-term costs to choosing Christ in the fallen world, as Paul said, they do not compare, are not worthy to be compared to the glory to be revealed in us. And all that glory and all those joys are possible only and exclusively because in Jesus Christ the true price has already been paid.
We want to take a moment to thank all of you, our listeners, for setting aside time each week for the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast on this station. You can find out more about the church with a quick visit to our website at www.christforeastcanton.com. On behalf of Pastor Terry and all the folks at Indian Run Christian Church, I pray God's blessing on you and on you. and your family